The U.S. Supreme Court ended its session this week with a flurry of highly anticipated rulings and emotional, sometimes deeply personal, dissenting opinions. Justices embraced affirmative action in a case involving admissions at the University of Michigan Law School. They knocked down a criminal sodomy law in Texas and, in effect, overturned similar laws in 12 other states. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has been the hardest working person in show business this week. Thanks for saving some time for us.
My pleasure, Scott.
The University of Michigan case first. How big a victory was this for proponents of affirmative action? And at the same time, what limitations did the court suggest?
It was a huge victory for proponents of affirmative action because the whole idea of considering race as a factor in college admissions, which had been in effect for a quarter century, was in doubt. And there had been a campaign by some groups to have a colorblind admissions process that was fought assiduously by, one would have to say, the education establishment, by the service academies, West Point, the Air Force Academy, etc., by the business community, and the court, by a 5-4 vote, upheld the right to use race and ethnicity as a factor in college admissions. And Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who wrote the court's opinion, did that explicitly to make sure that what she called the training ground for the nation's leaders was a ground that was populated, at least in significant measure, by minorities.
Mm-hmm. Did it suggest limitations at the same time?
They absolutely did, but I would have to tell you that what those limitations are is a bit amorphous. Clearly, there are some things universities cannot do. They cannot have a point system that awards points for race, which is the program at the undergraduate school that was invalidated. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the court said that as long as you evaluated each person as an individual and in his or her entirety, you could consider numbers as long as you did it flexibly. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think it gives colleges and universities a fair amount of latitude.
Justice O'Connor was considered the swing vote. Was her opinion in any way surprising, looking back on it now, with previous opinions she'd expressed in the court?
Well, in the past, she's been, one would have to say, relatively hostile to affirmative action, but has always said there is a place for it at the right moment. And she obviously thought this was the right moment. And if you look at her own background, I did an interview with her not long ago where I said to her, you know, when President Reagan nominated you to the Supreme Court, your name wasn't on anybody's list of the best scholars, the best litigators, the most prominent judges. So do you think this was an affirmative act? And she said, yes. He reached out to make sure there was a woman on the court. And if you look at her life, when she came of age in the legal profession, when she couldn't get a job in the beginning, a paying job, because nobody was hiring women, I think you have to accept the fact that her experience with diversity is that it counts.
Let me ask you about the Texas case. Did the court make a distinction between endorsing privacy, anything consenting adults want to conduct in their own private lives, and endorsing homosexual conduct?
I'm going to read to you from what Justice Kennedy, who wrote the majority opinion, said. He said, to say the issue in the 1986 court decision when the court upheld sodomy laws, to say that the issue there was simply the right to engage in certain sexual conduct demeans the claim the individual put forward, just as it would demean a married couple were it to be said marriage is simply about the right to have sexual intercourse. It suffices for us to acknowledge that adults may choose to enter upon this relationship in the confines of their homes and their own private lives and still retain their dignity as free persons.
The court also ruled in a Maryland death penalty case that a defense lawyer didn't do enough to keep his client off of death row. Is this, to use a term of art, a wake-up call for lawyers across the country?
I think it is. The last time the court ruled on the question of ineffective assistance of counsel, it made a very broad statement that there had to be reasonable efforts made at investigation and at presentation of the evidence. And it's never spelled out what those reasonable efforts might be. In this case, Justice O'Connor, writing for a 7-member court majority, said that a Maryland lawyer had been derelict because he had not investigated the background of the defendant in a case and presented to the jury at the time of sentencing, and this was a death case, the extreme abuse this guy suffered as a child, or the fact that he was borderline retarded, or many other factors that might have swayed the jury, and she said quite probably would have swayed the jury. So I think it is a wake-up call.
Thanks very much. NPR's Nina Totenberg.
My pleasure, Scott.